Hey, and welcome to another episode of Movie Mastery. I'm John. As always, Jeff is here with me.
I sure am.
It's a special, special episode, for we have a guest this time. First time on Movie Mastery, and it's Claire!
This is a very special episode that you should talk to your parents about before you listen, kids.
Yeah, be sure and call your parents and let them know you're going to listen to this and tell them you've made some really poor choices in life. So, as you know, we watch movies you suggest, and first we watch the trailer, let you know what our predictions are, and then we get into the movie. This week, we are watching Mommy Dearest.
So this one was actually recommended by Claire way, way back when we first started assembling recommendations at all. I actually had to roll an 8 to get this out of, I think, about 53 or so movies that are in the list right now. So, yeah, it was about time. Unfortunately, I have seen it.
I have not.
And neither have I.
Yeah, which is perfect. So that means that you two can give your predictions about what you expect from the trailer, and I can just read my phone for the next 2 hours.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So fire away. What do you think? What'd you think of the trailer?
Well, that trailer was
like the whole goddamn movie,
pretty much. Also, I can't get into any of the like biopic things. I sort of don't care about celebrities or what their lives were like.
Mm-hmm.
So every time I'm like, oh, they had it hard and they needed to do a thing, I'm like, oh, I don't fucking care. Are there dragons in this? Who fucking cares then?
Sometimes there's riding the dragon in a celebrity biopic.
Yeah, about Cisco.
I don't know. This trailer was way too long. I mean, it's an old school trailer. This movie's from like 1981, I think.
And it was also made in the style of those, like, you know, 40s and 50s movies that Joan Crawford was in. And it was customary to have a really long, stupid trailer exactly like this. So it's a shout out to the genre of movies that Crawford was in.
Yeah, I was going to say, it definitely feels like this is the type of trailer you would have seen for like Gone with the Wind and stuff like that. It's just, and now, here's things, and the plot, all of the twists, here they are!
Yeah, but from basically just from watching the trailer, the impression you get is, this is a movie about a super Hollywood celebrity who has it all, and then she gets a baby, and then she goes crazy.
Yep. That's exactly what happens to all women, so I don't see the problem.
Yes, all women are Hollywood celebrities. Little known fact.
And then they go crazy, regardless of whether or not they have a baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Accurate.
Yeah, so in this case, we see her getting a baby that apparently isn't hers, and it's very expensive to get the baby.
Well, then it's hers.
And then
she
it is
paid
hers.
For it.
Yeah, well, yeah, you're right. The invisible hand of capitalism says that's her baby. Doesn't matter how Chinese it might be. It is not. It's a very white baby.
It's a perfectly Aryan baby.
They paid
Jeff.
A lot of extra money to get Aryan.
Yeah, that's why it was expensive.
Yeah.
There's the scene in the trailer where he's like, oh, you cost me a lot of money. And I'm like, well, yeah, you got a blonde baby. Of course you did.
That's like when you go and get a teriyaki bowl and you pay extra for white meat. It's the same in baby trafficking.
Yeah, every time you want that white meat.
All right, so predictions? What do you guys think?
I think Joan Crawford goes crazy. All
right, well, like, that's literally the plot of the film.
I watch her have a thing where she beats her kid with a wire hanger, so...
And that's one of the things about the movie that has made it into pop culture in generally, as beating a child with a wire hammer as being, like, kind of the epitome of child abuse.
Yeah, no more wire hangers! And she's whapping her with it, yeah, yeah.
So there should be various and exciting forms of child abuse. I hope for quite a plethora. Aside from that, I definitely expect awesome costumes.
That's a good expectation. This is a very period piece movie.
I have no idea what actually happened in Joan Crawford's life at all, so I can just make predictions on what happened and be completely wrong for what was in reality. Like, I can go, yeah, I think her kid murdered her. Sure. Why not? That's how the movie ends. The kid stands over Joan Crawford's lifeless corpse with a knife going, and that's for you, Mommy Dearest.
Well, based on her histrionics, her kid murders her about once a day. That's based on what she's, oh, you're murdering me! She'll say a lot of that. So you'll be all set for that. I know there's some highs and lows for me in this film, so I'm actually kind of looking forward to like the first 15 to 20 minutes of it again.
Given that impression, I feel like my prediction is apparently that she turns into a goat slowly throughout the movie.
Oh
my God!
Make fun of my attempt at a mid-Atlantic accent. Fine.
You were a little too Hepburn with that.
Oh, okay. That's what I was aiming for. I was shooting for the Hepburn.
All right. You passed Hepburn, went straight to County Fair.
That's some pig. Crunchy. Well, I guess we should go watch the movie.
Yep, let's go ahead and see that, and then we will be back with our book report on what we did this summer with Mommy. We are back from the dreamlike limbo state that is Mommy Dearest.
Yeah, one of the things I wanted to talk about, and I forgot to when we were doing the intro, is that this actually has two trailers. They did that original trailer, which we just watched, 2.5 or 3 or 7.
However many hours ago it was.
I forget.
It feels like a lifetime.
Did I have this beard?
Where am I? Who am I?
Flying cars? What year is it? Why, it is Christmas Day.
I haven't missed it.
No, but they actually cut a second trailer for this film after showing it to test audiences who thought it was a comedy because it's so campy and so melodramatic.
I object to the word campy. I'll agree with melodramatic, but camp, just, I wasn't feeling that word in this. It's very mannered in the style of movies from the 40s and 50s.
Well, I feel like campy is something you try for now.
Yes.
And this is not trying for it. This is trying to be deadly serious.
Yeah. The problem with that is that it's not, like, the whole point of the Joan Crawford thing is that she was constantly overacting even in her normal life.
Right. You have to, it's a Gloria Swanson thing.
But it just makes it so that you can't ever take the real life scenes seriously because it all seems like bad acting, even if bad acting is how she acted in real life. So you're watching this going like, I don't know if that's accurate or not, but watching it makes me feel like I'm watching a high school production of someone's life.
Well, no, it's meta because Faye Dunaway is actually a very good actress. So to see her performing like that, I feel like it's really a testament to her craft that it's very meta. She's an actress playing an actress who's constantly acting in her real life badly, but Faye Dunaway is doing it well.
And
it's meta. Just think about it.
There's a whole extra layer in there too, because she's taking her cues about how angry and melodramatic to be in any given scene from the fact that this screenplay is based on, Joan Crawford's daughter's book.
Yeah. Christina Crawford.
Yeah, Christina Crawford. So that book is probably very colored by having been Christina Crawford, and therefore there's a lot of extra anger that she has to act in this, Faye Dunaway, and that Diana Scarmid has to act out throughout this thing about how sort of stiff and angry they are. It really reads like a kid wrote the book. At least in certain script, the big confrontation scenes are just like, I'm mad.
Yeah, it's probably an exaggeration. I would guess that Joan Crawford was way more calm and reasonable while she was beating her daughter with a coat hanger.
I'm not saying it's not exaggerated. What I'm saying is that when it was written for the book, it literally comes out from conversations that were probably a little deeper to just, I'm mad. No, you lied. I'm damn mad. It's just very simple.
No, I like the idea that that's how she was.
See, the main issue I have with that is that the movie ends up having just small snippets, and maybe in the book there's more of a through line for everything. But in the movie, we start with just little scenes of, oh, here's Joan Crawford, and she wants to have a baby, and then she gets a baby, and then it just goes. But there's no plot line.
Yeah, there's
a timeline.
There's a
suffering. But there's not a plot line.
There's an issue that definitely comes up from that, which is that the whole middle of this movie is basically the same scene over and over again, which is that we learn very early on, like literally in the opening pre-credit sequence, we learn that Joan Crawford suffered from crippling OCD because we see her getting ready in the morning.
Was it OCD? We might have to play a round of name that mental illness because
okay, fair enough.
I'm seeing more NPD personally.
You'll have to spell out what that
narcissistic
is.
Narcissistic personality okay. disorder.
Neil Patrick Darris.
She's got a wicked case of Neil Patrick Darris.
Neil Patrick Diamond.
Neil Patrick Daenerys.
Yeah. No. Well, I mean, you can also say, oh yes, well, this is just a reflection of what you have to do if you're a lady in Hollywood and you have to go through all of these things to be, like, the picturesque thing that they want you to be.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. That's kind of they want to set up that illusion in the beginning. That maybe she gets up at 3 a.m. and scrubs her elbows with a wire brush because it's the only way to be a famous Hollywood lady in the 40s.
Like, that's what the producers and all of the people around her expect her to do.
Yeah.
Is to be up at 3 a.m. and scrubbing her face.
Which is a relatively clever trick because, you know, by the middle of the movie, she's spending most of her time just drunkenly stumbling into her daughter's room and then whipping her with things. Which, because things aren't clean enough, and we lose the OCD thing, like, immediately. Like, we have that opening scene of her going, okay, I have to clean my face for forever. It takes forever to clean my face, and I have to use all this ice, and then I have to take a second hot shower, and it sucks. But then, the next shot is her getting mad at her maid for not moving a giant plant.
Yeah, it's yes. Oh, if you're gonna wash the floor, you gotta move everything out of the way and really do it right.
I'm not mad at you, I'm mad at dirt.
And to me, that whole scene with the plant where she yells at the maid for not moving the plant and cleaning the floor, that's much more just being a cunt, not so much being OCD. There's a difference. Yeah.
But, I mean, that's what you're supposed... I mean, this movie was made in 1981. I'm guessing that NPD is probably a more recent... At this point, they probably would have just called her obsessive or something when the movie was made. They really want you to go, oh, this is the sort of person who scrubs themselves forever. This will be a Rain Man movie in 2 years.
I feel like if it was all about her just being an asshole, then she wouldn't have gone down and scrubbed everything herself. Because I think that's the main point, is it shows her, even before she's, like, angry at the maid or whatever, she's on the floor scrubbing things herself.
And I thought that was an interesting sort of feint, because if you see that out of context, you think, oh, she's down to earth. She's not stuck up. She'll do cleaning herself. What a nice lady. But then you start to understand that something else is going on there.
Oh, yeah. Well, anyway, we have her first boyfriend in the film. The first of, I think, 4 different people she dates during the film. Which is this sort of very late 40s, early 50s, rugged, kind of like cheesecloth voice guy. Ah, baby, I find you attractive.
That's not what cheesecloth sounds like.
It is when you stuff it down your throat.
Yeah. You've never heard me with cheesecloth on the throat.
That's what happens. So he helps her get a baby through nefarious means. I mean, they won't let her adopt, which is, I find amusing that she can't simply buy an adoption in like 1948 or whatever it is.
I don't find that strange, because even today a single woman would have trouble adopting a child, and so they're saying it's friggin' 39 or 40 or whatever.
Yeah, it's 39,
you're
right.
Not married, you've been divorced 2 times, you work all the time, we can't give you a baby. And then the adoption agency chick sort of says something like, we think you'd be an unfit mother. And I think they were sort of accidentally right. I mean, did they have a shrink
talk? Yeah, that lady was trying to save a baby. But I
understand.
Like,
I've been around you for 5 minutes, and I know. Yeah. I know you're terrible.
I feel like getting a baby out of an adoption agency should have been getting harder over the past 60 or 70 years instead of easier. I feel like back then you should have just been able to walk into a room full of adorable Moppets and pick one up and walk off. It doesn't even need to be an orphanage.
Yeah, you have to go to Russia to do that shit.
I mean, Daddy Warbucks managed to get a whole bunch of them, and he didn't even have a wife. I mean, he was a single man.
Yeah, so, but he was a man.
Oh, that's right. You're right. I'm sorry. He
Annie
was a man.
Is known for its verisimilitude and its accurate portrayal of the adoption process.
It's every bit as true to life as this film would appear to be. This movie could have used some charming songs.
Oh my god, why haven't they redone this as a musical?
That would be amazing.
This is exactly the sort of story that Broadway would love to get its nails into right
a
now.
A Mommy Dearest musical? That would fix the camp thing.
Yes. The second you talked about, like, oh, there aren't any songs, I was like, oh shit. Oh no, because that is perfect.
No more hanging wires. Just be perfect.
No, mommy, no, mommy, no.
That is awesome. And that would also let us cast, like, a drag queen in the lead role.
Yeah.
Because, let's face it, that is a drag queen position right there. I mean, they should have cast one instead of Faye Dunaway.
If only we still had Divine.
Oh, Divine would have been right for this. Yeah. We could have gotten Divine.
No. I'm not going to put my foot down on that one. No.
You can't stop it.
No one puts their foot down on
Divine.
Oh,
man. Just stumbling into a room covered in cold cream and dog poop.
Oh, God. And then she'd have to prepare for the movie.
Oh. All right. So her skeezy lawyer boyfriend manages to get her a baby through some channel.
Yeah.
We don't know. He just The first thing he says about the baby is, "Hello, baby, you were expensive." Which is an awesome grip. "You cost me a lot of favors, baby."
"You, baby, literal baby."
I gotta say, whoever that is, that's my favorite character in the movie. And I'm so sad when he walks out. Because every line he has is like that. And there's a point where she's like, "I want a kid. I want to adopt." And he's like, "Out of the question, doll." He's just like, man. The 50s just drip out of you, don't they? "Yeah. When I towel off, I leave a bunch of 50s behind. I poop cigarettes." Anyway, she gets the baby from him and then gets mad at him over something or other. Oh, I'm sorry. Before that happens, we do the birthday scene, because she's the baby's only a baby for one scene in the film.
Yeah, yeah. Here's a baby, and then smash cut to a circus on your lawn
with a girl who will be 8 for what is probably the next 10 years. I have no idea. This movie's got the worst sense of time.
Yeah, the number one complaint about this movie for me was not the bad acting, not the weird dialogue. Aside from the eyebrows, it would be just the passage of time was not communicated in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, the only way that this movie was able to really let you know time had moved forward was clothing.
Yeah, they get one giveaway, which is when they switch the child actor out for the adult actor of the daughter.
And that's it. You get some old makeup on Faye Dunaway.
Yeah.
But even then, within scenes, it would be like, "Oh, fucking mommy is angry at you because you've ruined her chances to do, I don't know, fill in the blank, it doesn't matter.
Some film thing."
And then she's like, "I need to go out, so you need to take care of your room." And then it would cut, and she would be in a completely different outfit and running around in a different part of the house, and you're like, "Oh, this is tomorrow." No, it's that night. She hasn't even left yet. I'm like, what the fuck is going on?
And I feel like they thought that just changing clothes would work to set the time scale, but Joan Crawford was a person who for most of her life was trapped in the late 40s.
Yes, exactly.
So every dress she comes in is just yet another late 40s dress.
And in 1981, I feel like audiences might have still been able to read the nuance of the difference between, like, World War II fashion, new look, and so on.
Yeah.
But we can't follow that until she gets the 60s hair.
Which, yeah, you're right. And the big thing is it doesn't really matter because, okay, we get a birthday party scene where she's riding around on her daughter on a carrot with her daughter.
Yes,
riding around on her daughter. Just using that reverse cowgirl. No, she's on a carousel with her daughter, asking her if she's having a lovely time. And then we get an interesting setup, which is that she has to go and take her daughter and pose as they open up birthday presents. And there's this hectoring photographer who's just like, "Oh, you need to have her change out that grass stain for the studio."
Yeah, that might show.
The studio needs pictures of her opening presents. And
the studio needs pictures. Pictures of Spider-Man!
What I meant to go by with this was, I thought this, when I first watched this movie, because again, I've seen this before, when I first watched this movie, I thought that that was going to be part of the plot, was that this girl's life was going to be dominated by the studio system.
Right.
And instead, that's a one-off scene. This one photographer is just like, "No, we need pictures of her opening a present. Look how good she is at modeling."
Right, it's not a JonBenet Ramsey story. It's not, you know, Gypsy. It's not about the mother trying to mold the little girl into a star. It's just about the mother being insane and abusing the child.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
So anyway, that happens, and then we get the first sign that the mom is, or that Joan Crawford is dangerous and abusive to her child, because when she comes upstairs, and this is halfway there, this is halfway abusive. She's like, "Oh, do you like that doll the most? Good, because we're going to pack up all your other toys and give them to orphans."
Yeah. And you get to keep one thing.
Yeah.
And then the...
lawyer.
And then 50s guy comes in and is like,
"Hey, baby,
I got you this bracelet. I know you like it."
Yeah.
And then, like, Joan Crawford gets to be like, "Oh, well, I guess maybe you can have two things."
Yeah, after what I'm going to say is the biggest thing in this movie is a 30-second interminable pause where we stare at Joan Crawford's face. I mean, honestly, forget Divine. If we remake this movie, it should be Daniel Day-Lewis, because all you need is just endless slow close-ups of the main character. Daniel Day-Lewis is Joan Crawford in Mommy Dearest 2.
See, I want to go back to the birthday scene, because to me, the most horrifying and abusive thing in that scene were her sleeves.
Oh, yeah. She's wearing
that dress.
She's wearing a poof sleeve. She's wearing some poof sleeves.
They're as big as her head.
Yeah. I assume that poof sleeves are something that has more kind of a negative reaction from women than from men who never wear them. did you get stuck in those at like a homecoming dress at some point?
Yeah, no. A bridesmaid's dress when I was about 12. I still have flashbacks.
Yeah. I feel like there's a couple of fashion items that men will never understand that women are like, "Ugh." I mean, one of them's poof sleeves. Another one would be the butt bow.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah. But you're right, that outfit is horrifying. And then she gets a grass stain on it, so forget about it, right?
We also, in the birthday scene, find out that she has adopted a little boy as well.
Oh, yeah.
And we have Christina and now Christopher.
Oh,
but
God.
We had one baby for, like, maybe a minute before we smash cut to, okay, it's like 5 or 6 years later, and now it's your birthday, and hey, I've got another baby. And then we sort of forget that he exists for most of it.
Yeah. But he's like... he has one line in the whole movie. The son gets one line. He offers to help at one point. It is rejected. And then he comes back at the very end as Xander Berkeley.
And this is just one more thing in the movie that makes it feel very dreamlike to me. That's my whole point to this movie is it feels like you're watching someone dream because it just... goes between different places and times without any real semblance of movement. There's no development in anyone. People just react to things randomly.
Yeah.
And, like, threads get picked up and dropped. There's a baby. The baby isn't there. He's a little kid. The little kid isn't there. Like, yeah. It just... it's so weird. There's
I wanted to know what was going on with him being strapped to the bed. Like, was that punishment? Was it behavior control?
Oh,
did he have epilepsy?
No,
Why was he strapped to the bed?
He presumably... well, you notice in the very first shot of the baby version of him, he's already wearing the little yellow bed straps.
Huh.
So, I assume he has some sort of tossing and turning disease. Or he probably just tosses and turns, and his mom freaks his weird mom out.
Right. Yeah.
So she just straps him down so he doesn't.
Well, it was one of those little details in the movie that I went... that's way more interesting than literally anything
well,
you have said.
You know, it's just something that's in the book. And they were like, well, we have to show him sleeping because he shares a room with a daughter. So I guess we got to put this strap thing on it because it's mentioned in the book. But God knows this movie is not about that son at all. Even in scenes when he's an adult and in the room, people still talk to her, to the daughter, as if the son's not also in there. They're just like, this is the part of the will that that addresses Christina. And I guess Christopher, too. And your brother, Christopher, wherever he is.
Jeff, you're spoiling the movie.
Oh, I'm sorry. Gosh, jeez, I'm sorry, guys.
Oh,
sorry,
oh,
spoiler
no.
alert. Someone dies. We don't know who yet, but someone.
Oh, just you wait.
Maybe it's the maid. Anyway, at this point, she breaks up with Rad50's dude because he does something that offends her at a Hollywood restaurant. She thinks he's pimping her out to Hollywood bankers in order to get parts in movies, which he is because she told him to.
Yeah, well, that's the weirdest thing in the that scene that they have at the restaurant is they show up at a restaurant and there are fans around and she stands around outside to, like, sign autographs, whatever, and he goes in. When he goes in, he sees the head of the studio and some bankers, talks to them. When Joan Crawford comes in and is like, oh, you got invited over to Mayor's table, and he's the head of the studio, and these are two very, like, super rich banker guys. And the fact that she didn't want to sit with them when he was like, hey, you should sit with us.
No, that's not...
like, what?
No, I got
that's
it. Not
the
I point.
Completely
she's, got it. Because she's not... she thinks the restaurant is hers. She's possessive of her own experience. And for her to sit down at their table means that she's doing what they want. What she would prefer to do is sit down at her own table at her own restaurant because she... totally is the boss of the restaurant, and have them come to her.
Well, she also sees it as a measure of her value that if she were the one sitting at her own table and they had to come to her as a supplicant, then that would reaffirm for her the idea that she's really powerful and Mayor is indebted to her. The studio relies on her and all these money men rely on her. But for him to strong-arm her into being arm candy, basically, and some novelty for the bankers to be entertained by
dinner, so they can go home and tell their
wives.
That's
what set her off, that she felt like her power had been taken from her.
Yeah,
oh,
no, that's
goodness.
That's absolutely right. And so she starts yelling it at... Rad50's dude and throwing drinks at him. And then he's like, baby, I'm leaving. I should have left a long time ago and I'm walking out the door. And
his final line was so great. It was like, good night. Good luck. Goodbye.
Oh, yeah. Because this movie's got so many, like, scene ending. A lot of the scenes end with a person saying something, then you stare at their face for a long time, then they say it again. It's like Samwise Gamgee all over again.
It's just Yoda.
You will be.
It'll be all right, Mr. Frodo. It'll be all right.
Mr. Frodo.
No, so he breaks up with her and she tries to keep him by doing like a seductive pose on the bed. She's like, oh shit, I went too far. I went too far in my crazy yelling at him and now he's going to leave and I can't have him leave because he's my ticket into Hollywood. So she tries to lie down seductively on the bed, which... It just doesn't.
No.
Like, doesn't
come
play.
Here. Join me on the bed. I'm only mostly crazy right now.
I'm fully clothed and ready to go.
Well, that was also where a lot of the All About Eve parallels came in for me, where she's this aging star. She thinks she's still hot shit and super sexy, but everybody else is starting to not see her that way anymore. And she can't acknowledge that. Well, she's not sexy anymore.
That's, yet again, one of the reasons I like 50s dudes so much is that in that scene, he's like, baby, you keep acting like you're young. You're old. I'm old. We're old. Let's do old people stuff. And she's like, how dare you?
Come on, let's have old people sex. Just slow and sloppy.
I didn't get old. It's the pictures that got young.
A pile of carpets on top of another pile of carpets. That's what our sex looks like now.
Yeah. So, this, of course, just sends Joan into a... I mean, I would say it sends her into a spiral, but I think she's already at the bottom.
Yeah.
It just makes her start twirling on the ground.
Oh, yeah,
like
Homer Simpson.
Stooges.
Yeah. Woo-hoo! Yeah. So, I don't even remember which version of daughter punishing she does in this sequence. I think it's the one where she goes off and cuts her daughter's hair.
No, I think the hair cutting was earlier, because I'm thinking about the bangs that she had
in
that scene.
So, so we had the freak out over her when she had to leave the studio
she gets
or whatever.
Asked to leave MGM. So
we
she,
had the freak out
the
when
garden.
She got the role in another movie, and that's when she cuts her daughter's hair.
That's the haircut.
But then it's when she wins the Oscar. That's the night of the coat hanger scene, isn't it?
Yes, it is. So the haircut is when she gets the part in some. Oh, it's Mildred Pierce. She gets a job in Mildred, a role in Mildred Pierce or Fierce or whatever that is, and she goes
Mildred
up.
Mildred Fierce and coming to a theater near you.
No, Mildred Fierce is definitely the drag queen version of that.
BRB rolling
Dude,
Mildred Fierce.
Mildred Fierce is just a rad drag queen name,
right?
Yeah.
Oh my god, if
dress
that's
up
not
in
someone's
early 50s,
name right now,
yeah.
Oh, get
attention
it.
All drag queens.
We know you're all listening.
Mildred Fierce. Get it done. You're going to have to explain it to a lot of people because no one remembers the films of 1952.
Excuse you, Kate Winslet was just in the remake.
Of Mildred Fierce?
Mildred Pierce.
Oh, I'm sorry. Because I'm talking about Mildred Fierce. So she goes up and cuts her daughter's hair forcefully. And in each one of these scenes, and let's... The reason we're just rattling them off on our
fingers,
the it's because they're the same. She walks up behind her daughter while her daughter's doing crazy shit that she did because her mom is crazy. So she's in there pretending to be her mom.
That's not even crazy. She's a little girl playing a dress up at her mom's vanity.
There was the one where it was like after the vanity scene and she had been like super crazy and cuts her daughter's hair and is absolutely bonkers.
She's being loud on the lawn is the other one. And she gets sent to her room. So she goes in there and yells at her dolls.
Yeah, she pretends to be her mom. Essentially, he's like, you kids, you woke mom up and you can't do that. You're bad and selfish. And you get the scene where she's talking to her dolls like Joan talks to her.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then Joan's in the background and sees her daughter doing this. And you're like, oh my god.
Maybe this will be the realization.
She sees how she's treating her daughter by the way her daughter's treating her dolls. And you even get on her face that sort of like, oh, I can't believe this is happening. But no, the next scene is the dolls are missing. Her daughter goes, someone took my dolls. And she's just like, well, you should be glad to be rid of them because they were so terrible and selfish.
I swear to God, that scene was the most abusive thing in the entire film.
Oh, yes.
I don't care about the coat hanger, but intimating to your daughter that you will throw her away like a doll if she behaves badly, holy shit.
Yeah, and also that was the scene where John and I immediately agreed that what should have happened is that the top half of that Vader thing would close over her while she rotates away.
She's swanning around on this sort of round white leather couch.
Yeah,
it's this giant round couch that's sort of sunken, so it's got this high back. And as soon as we cut to her, I'm like, oh, there's a top to this. This is a dome.
It's going
to
close down on her so she can take her mask off. And she's just sitting there rubbing cream on her elbows. Her robot elbows.
Like a
you guys,
villain, yeah.
Because Obi-Wan cut her off at the elbows. Oh. Baby, I'm going to cut her elbows off.
You are supposed to bring balance to the Force, baby.
1950s Obi-Wan. That's the best.
If that fanfic is not on Archive of Our Own in the next 24 hours, I swear to God.
So, So anyway, basically the reason that we're just rattling these off is because they're the same shit. She staggers into her daughter's room, or there's two versions. One of them is she staggers in while her daughter's sleeping and just looks around for something to be mad about. The other one is her daughter's doing something, and then it's revealed that mom is behind her. And that's the thing that gets me is I had to learn growing up that I had a little brother I had to share a room with. I got ninja good at knowing when it's safe to masturbate. You do. You learn to masturbate deadly silent, and you learn, you're just like, always like, all right, I'm masturbating, I've got this going on, oh, I heard a noise, oh, stop. Put it away, tuck it into the waistband, good, okay. I am not masturbating, everything is fine. You'd think that the daughter, who learns a lot of crazy behaviors from the mom, would learn to dodge the mom. Like,
through
like,
masturbation!
I'm sorry, I gotta stop you here, because I'm really hoping we get a Mommy Dearest-esque book about your masturbation.
No, because I was good at it. I didn't get caught.
Like, I need this movie, of course, also starring drag queens, yes, to give me your life story of jerking off.
All I'm saying is that when you're a kid, you learn real quick how to deal with negative things in your house. I got really good at avoiding when, like, my dad would come home and be slightly angry over something, like, when I had bad grades or something. I got really good at reading moods. The daughter in this is a dumbass.
No, because there are definitely scenes where she can see it boiling up in her mom, but the big abusive scenes are out of nowhere.
Well,
she's not misbehaving. Yeah.
There's a point where, when I had a rough, late period in my childhood where I spent a lot of my time being grounded and didn't want to talk to my parents at all, I hit the point where it could be my dad's birthday and they could be celebrating in the living room and I'd just be in my room. Because if I went out there, it would be about me all of a sudden. I'd be like, hey dad, happy birthday. And he'd be like, you suck. Why are you still in my house? And I'd be like, huh. So I just stopped doing that. But every scene in this movie starts with her going wandering into her mom's room. Mom, are you in here? Would you like to beat me up, maybe?
She never did that. Okay,
no, the drink.
Scene with the vodka.
The drink.
When she brought her the vodka.
And when she finds her mom drunk.
When she brought her the vodka drink, and the lager drink, and the whiskey drink,
and the cider drink.
Yeah.
No, when she... But no, there's also the scene where she finds her mom drunk. She just wanders in. Mom, I came in here to say goodnight. Why? Why would you do that? It's quiet. She's not hitting you. Just let it be dead.
Keep your head down.
So there's like eight of these freaking things, and there's nothing that you learn.
The worst one, of course, and we've mentioned it several times, is the wire hanger, and I want to talk about that real quick.
Because there's a lot of attention.
Because there's a very specific question to be raised.
Is which horror movie clown is Joan Crawford in this scene?
Oh yeah, because she's got the cold cream going and the lipstick still.
Yeah, she straight up, to me, watching it, I was like, you're Pennywise the clown. You have come into this room and you're like, Georgie, I'm here to beat you with a wire hanger.
And I got the new, not the very new, not the Jared Leto or Leto or whatever, but the Heath Ledger Joker, because she's crying a lot of the makeup off. Yeah. And so, to me, I got an immediate, you want to know how I got these scars?
I'm gonna have to give it to Jeff. I'm gonna have to give it to Jeff on this one.
Yeah, because she shows up in this cold cream, and this is the famous wire hanger scene. The real question to me, this is the big thing that's raised. This daughter never leaves this house. She never even gets to go out in the yard or anything. Where the fuck did she get wire hangers? Would she order them?
The maid should be getting beaten in this scene.
No, that's the one thing about this, which is sort of interesting to me, is we never see her be abusive to the maid, even though almost all of the stuff that the child gets blamed for, whether it's the playing outside or the certain things she hasn't cleaned up, or there's a dress on a wire hanger. And of course, you can't put a dress on a wire hanger because I'm crazy and I'm Joan Crawford.
Well, it's the early 50s. I assume that wire hangers are made of lead and they just melt through dresses.
No,
I don't even know.
Okay, I'll explain this to you, gentlemen, because you don't understand this. When you have a very nice dress and you hang it on a wire hanger, it creates a crease in the shoulder of the dress. And that is what Joan Crawford is freaking out about.
I feel like you're
going to hit me. It's a $300 dress. Oh, I am. It's a $300 dress and it's on a wire hanger and it's going to ruin the dress. And that's why all the other hangers were padded with fabric. They were probably scented sachets.
It still doesn't explain how the little kid got them.
Yeah, that's what
I
I'm
agree
saying.
With you on that.
So there's the one dress that's hung up with a wire hanger and she freaks out and starts throwing, like, all of the dresses out and going, where are all the wire hangers? And what the fuck? What did you think the kid did? Leave and go buy some?
Okay, I mean, pro tip, not super rational.
The best I can think, that I can figure, is that maybe she took one of her brother's hangers, because who gives a shit about his clothes, right?
Right.
That's because literally, this is the scene where he has his one line as a kid in the movie, and then he just straps himself right back into bed. It's like, goodbye, I will see you at the funeral. Good day, ma'am. And that's it for him. So maybe they're his hangers that she's just accidentally picked up and used. Although, I don't think
this was it. No, because this was hung up at about eye level to Joan Crawford.
Yeah.
Which
yes.
means that there is no possible way that she put this on a hanger yeah. and put it up there.
Although, I think all we're doing is pointing out that Joan Crawford is crazy. Because it's like, obviously she did it, and now she's mad about it.
Well, yeah, possibly. That was the other thing yeah. is, when she's talking about certain hairstyles, like when she freaks out and cuts her hair, she's like, oh, your hair, you look like a tramp, I won't send you to school like that. I'm like, you're the one who gets her hair cut.
Yeah, well, no, she's deeply irrational. She starts crying in the middle of that scene because she realizes that she's been being crazy for a couple of minutes. I assume that a lot of this movie, because we don't get to see it from Joan Crawford's side, because this is a book written by her angry-ass daughter, is that Joan Crawford probably has a lot of moments throughout her life where she's like, holy shit, I'm fucking nuts. What the shit did I just do?
Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, and it just keeps happening. And it starts, we didn't even talk about the scene that starts it, which is her challenging her daughter to races in the pool so she can beat her and laugh at her about it.
Yeah,
which
at
is,
that point, she just kind of seems like maybe she's a bitch. We're yeah. not really sure how deep this is going to
yeah.
go.
But it's well, wonderful because that comes later where she's like, oh, and no one will ever, like, let you win, and I'm bigger than you, so I'll always beat you. And then later in the movie, she's like, why does everything have to be a contest with you? Yeah. It's like, oh, you bitch!
Yeah. Although, that does set up how crazy she is, because we get Rad Lawyer Uncle looking at him like, oh, god damn it. Look at that, she's just being mean to that kid. You shouldn't be mean to kids, you should be mean to communists.
I bought you that child. Treat that child well.
That was expensive. I don't want to have to get you another one when that one goes to the loony bin.
The warranty's out on that one, baby.
You know how we do lobotomies in this day and age? It's all screwdriver to the eye socket. It sucks. So, okay. Eventually, we switch out of old lawyer boyfriend from the 50s to modern, slick 60s lawyer boyfriend, who was really mad at the daughter for calling him Uncle Tim or whatever.
He's like, I'm
right,
not your uncle.
He understands that
yeah,
that's creepy.
That's crazy. Anyway, because Christina is burgeoning on her adolescence, she finds her mom making out with this guy. Very interesting. So she finds an excuse to walk in and look at them, which means boarding school right away. Just instant boarding school, which yeah. is, I thought was an awesome sequence.
Well,
it's disposing of a problem.
Jeff, exactly. You know,
yeah.
Joan Crawford was very attuned to the presence of other people in the house when she was trying to have an orgasm.
Oh, no,
I think you of all people would understand this.
First of all, the lawyer told her. She was deep in makeout time, and he was like, hey, we've got company. I should whack her? Because this guy is very much just a mobster. Instead of the cool 50s dude from the beginning, he's just like, yeah, give me some scotch, kid.
Okay, so also with that, the problem with her going straight to boarding school after that scene is, you think it's pretty much just a one-to-one, like, oh, you kind of walked in when mommy was getting felt up. You were just definitely cock-blocking mommy here, so off to boarding school you go. And that's the problem with the movie, is there's just cut, cut, cut from everything, and you're like, really? Did we just go straight from, like, and then the following morning, boarding school?
That was my favorite cut, because it implied that, and I think that's the case. I think literally Joan Crawford gets up the next morning and is like, well, she's become a liability. And off to boarding school she goes.
It's so insane to me. I almost wish I had read the book just to know, but I don't know if the book would also just be, like, each chapter is a small vignette, and then it's just, nothing else, no, like, tie-in to anything.
I like to think it's one of those humor books, like, the whole thing was written by, what's-his-face, forget it. It's one of those books about, like, growing up, you have to buy your wife at least as much jewelry as you buy your horse and other wit and wisdom of the West. Where it's just little vignettes, and it's just like, well, then my mama done beat me up real good, but I learned a lesson. But really, it's probably closer to a Divine Secrets of the Ya-Ya Sisterhood type
yes.
thing. Where
and that
like,
is also a picaresque novel.
Yeah, where every episode is like, well, my mom beat the tar out of me, but I sure done learned a Southern lesson.
Yeah, what I learned was not to hand my mother an axe when she's going insane.
No, we need to talk about that scene, because
the cutting all the roses
that
down.
That scene is the best scene to me, because this is right after, isn't this right after she gets the
it's,
Oscar?
No, it's right after the cutting the roses is right after she gets kicked out of MGM.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
So she is in a gown that I like classic movies. I recognize this gown. This is an Adrian gown that she wore at some point in the late 30s, early 40s, and she's got it on. It's 2 a.m. She's in the rose garden with the garden shears. And to me, this scene redeemed the entire movie, because seeing Joan Crawford in an Adrian gown screaming insanely with garden shears, destroying her rose garden, worth the price of admission.
I also thought that scene was great because the maid comes in to wake up the daughter to help. So she's like, oh, yeah.
Yes.
She's like, what we need to do as a maid, my job is to enable...
Children, please wake up and come downstairs with your crazy mother.
Your terrifying mother has garden shears and you need to get down where she is right away.
This is why mandatory reporting laws were created.
Yeah.
To me, the maid is the villain of this piece because she had so many opportunities to report the child
abuse.
My
guess is that maid is literally the first attempt at a child, and that's why we don't see her beating up the maid, because the maid's broken already.
Yeah.
That horse lot is in the stable.
The nice thing, at least with that scene, is because it follows right after where MGM basically kicks her out of the studio, is it gives some idea of a setup for
it. Oh, yeah.
Everything else is just, okay, we're gonna open on this scene, and then Joan Crawford goes crazy. Here, it's oh, we have a fucking backstory for this? There's a reason things are happening?
Yeah.
Oh my god, amazing!
Alright, let's get to the back half of this thing, because she goes to boarding school, she's in boarding school for about 3 minutes as a child, and then all of a sudden she's a teenager, a 25-year-old teenager.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it, because she has to play that same actress until she's like 35, so we start with her being a little too old. And she's hanging out with like Reggie and Veronica from Sunnydale, Riverdale. We learned this last time. They're from Riverdale.
Sunnydale.
They're from
Sunnydale. Hanging out with Buffy and Xander from Sunnydale.
Yeah. No, they're in Riverdale, and she does a little tiny piece of Antigone.
Yes, which is appropriate, because that particular scene is about the child getting yelled at for spilling water on the floor.
Yeah.
It's so deep, y'all.
Although,
it's deep.
Although, true to life, she's terrible at it.
Yes.
It's a very weak performance of Antigone. Anyway, she clearly has a crush on this dude, the only dude in school, as far as we know.
Yes.
And then that pisses off the only other girl in school, as far as we know. And there's a sexy scene of her flirting with him and him hitting her with a sock. Over and over again. He takes his sock off and starts whipping her with it.
Well, now, you know, she's into it. I mean, I think that was the implication, that she's into being beaten.
Has
the
wire socks.
as the female voice in this.
Yeah.
So, how hot getting hit with socks? Scale of 1 to 10.
Well,
just break it down for us.
It depends on the sock.
It's a 50 sock, so it's silk or rayon.
Oh, absolutely. I was thinking of those cotton athletic socks. That would be the hottest, because it makes you think of, like, boys in locker rooms or something. But, like, a nice vintage crepe sock. Yeah, I could get down with that.
This is one of those things where two of us are going to come down to agree on you, because once you become bisexual or at least into dudes in any way, you realize that the stink that dudes put off is actually occasionally okay. And it doesn't make sense. You're like, why do I like this? Why do I want to smell it again?
Now, I have an excuse, because this is associated with ovulation in women. I don't know what your problem is.
I'm bisexual.
Oh, it's because you're a gross human being, and gross smells turn you on.
Just because I'm gross doesn't mean I don't have standards.
Yeah, you like your gross smells to be to a certain standard.
Yeah, you must be this gross to make Jeff have an erection.
All I'm saying is I work hard on my gross, and I would like to be the grossest thing in the room.
And I would like someone else to work hard on my gross.
It's kind of like how, you know, how girls always want to date men that are taller than them?
Mm.
I want to date a guy who's less stinky, so I can envelop him in my stink.
Like, I want to be the big stink spoon.
When we go out, it's my smell that people pick up on first.
Oh, God.
So, she's a teenager. She briefly tries to hook up with this guy after he lets her ride a horse, and then...
Oh, yeah. That's the most erotic thing that has ever happened to her. She's like, oh, yeah, guy rides a horse. I'm hot for you.
Well, that's another thing
that
if you're a teenage girl.
Ride it.
Yeah. That's another thing if you're a teenage girl. You're like, dude, is that a guy on a horse? Oh, man, if his name's Corey, my pussy's gonna fall out.
Oh my god, does someone get a canoe?
No, okay, so, and then she gets caught by the only other girl in school, because yet again, this is a movie where people are just coincidentally walking around behind this girl at all times.
Yeah.
Learn!
No situational awareness at all.
Well, she also has never learned to seat herself in such a way that she has a clear view of the windows and doors.
It just reminds me of our friend Russ, who literally will not... he has to have his back to a wall or a corner at all times. He's like a weasel.
He's a prey animal.
Yeah.
Predators might be coming, and you need to be aware at all time if a predator is coming.
I mean, this is a girl who has grown up as a prairie dog. Learn to deal with it. Do a pop-up check.
You know, this is the type of girl that I would imagine at this point had strung up, like, cans and string to make noise. Like, she's straight making the Walking Dead style traps.
It is the parent trap up in there. There's honey all over the place.
On the Home Alone.
Like, she's got a paint can ready to go.
The girl tries the door of the stable and there's a blowtorch on the other side.
Yeah, no, if you're always constantly getting walked in on, there's a point where you're like, you know what? Maybe it's me.
Yeah, maybe I masturbate too much. That's a lesson I learned. It's true, John. And then I moved out of my house, at my parents' house, and I was like, sweet, I can masturbate all I want. Lesson learned.
The more you know.
Now, what he doesn't know is that his masturbation still has the supernatural power to attract his parents into his room.
It's true.
He just doesn't notice anymore.
One thing is that
he's getting old.
Now, no matter what I do, masturbation or sex, otherwise, dead silent. It's like having sex with like a zombie or something. I'm just like, yep, I'm doing this. I'm not saying anything. These thrusts make no noise. Don't even worry about it. You're the one who makes noise. I make stink. I brought stink to the table.
And then if there's even the slightest queef, he goes crazy. I told you it had to be quiet.
Keep the air out of your vagina. Is that so much? As a child, I kept the air out of my vagina with a sponge. And a little drinking straw.
Good lord. Okay, so...
Mom pulls her out of school. Yeah,
so at that point, Mom freaks out because, oh my god, you're a harlot. And so now we need to take and put you into a convent.
Yeah.
That's going to teach you something.
After hilariously taking her out to dinner once, where she just rips into her. She's like, oh, come to school. You're having a great day at school. Why don't you come out to lunch with your mom? Oh, don't flirt with people. Flirting with people makes you look cheap. Just boom, right into her. And then when she brings her home from the high school, or boarding school, or whatever the fuck it is, she brings her home and there's a woman from Red Book there.
Oh, God.
And that's the big climactic scene of the film, or one of them, where her mom's really mad at her. And before she lets her go into the house, she's like, there's a woman here from Red Book. Do not ruin this for me. And so the daughter tries, and she comes in, and she's like, hello, it's very nice to see you. I am having a good time at school. And Joan Crawford cannot resist the opportunity to get a dig in, so she immediately goes, she was expelled. And she wasn't. Her mom pulled her out of school. She's like, that was a lie. And then they get into the best fight.
Yeah.
The best fight.
That was a pretty great... I will say that the fight was campy.
The fight is super campy.
Yeah.
I kind of wish it had gone on a little longer.
Yeah.
I wanted it to be like They Live levels of fight, where it's just all over
just
the house,
through the walls,
throwing into things,
just
busting up like
Jackie
all of the
Chan
armoires,
shooting through boxes of cereal.
One of them gets a ladder,
just straight top ropes the mother, like, oh, flying elbow.
But this before the fight is one of my favorite examples of the low level dialogue in this film, because it's just, how come you can't be nice to me? Why did you lie? Well, I didn't lie. You lied. Well, why would I lie to you? I'm mad. Well, I don't even think I want you as a daughter. Why not? And then they get into a fight, and it's a choke. She just goes, Joan Crawford goes in to choke her daughter, which is hilarious because she doesn't want to choke the actor. So we've got her hands very close to her neck, but the daughter's just going, like Jabba the Hutt getting choked out. And then she goes off to a convent.
Yeah. So it's great because you also get at the end of that, because it just jumps. And however many years later, she's out of the convent and has learned everything.
Yeah.
She's like, thank you, Mother Superior. Everything here was great. You barely even beat me. This is amazing. It's like a fucking vacation in here.
When a convent boarding school is an upgrade from your home environment, that's a red flag.
Yeah, and anyway, at this point, we start settling into the landing pattern of this movie. The Joan Crawford's got a new husband who
is like one of the board of Pepsi.
Yeah. And so she's milking him for money because no studio touches her anymore. The daughter moves out, gets an apartment, and gets a job on a soap opera. The Joan Crawford is spending way too much of Pepsi Guy's money, which is also, I'd say that is actually my favorite smash cut in the movie, is him saying, you're breaking my back with all this spending. Smash cut to him being dead and her facing the Pepsi board of directors.
And they're like, wow,
you killed him.
You owe a lot of money. This is crazy.
How did you kill him so fast? He was like 28. What did you do?
God damn, you horrible succubus.
And then my favorite scene for her, which is when she takes on the Pepsi board of directors and she's like, I'll destroy you fucks.
What's weird is that they're actually kind of scared of her. I would think that she would not be able to make good on the threat of driving Pepsi's brand into the ground by speaking out against it. If Joan Crawford won't drink your soda, no one will. Who gives a shit about Joan Crawford? It's like 1965.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I'm pretty sure everyone in there was like, okay, guys, we need to pretend to be nice to her because she is dumpster hobo levels of crazy right now. And if we say anything, I'm pretty sure she's going to bite my face off.
Look, I brought my kids to that wedding. She saw my kids. She knows what my kids look like.
I cannot have this.
So
she knows where I keep the hangers.
So that means that she manages to get to stay on the Pepsi Board of Trustees, which is how she has enough money to sort of retire and so on.
Although she retires badly. That last scene in the bed in her apartment is pretty pathetic.
Yeah, she does definitely go out. She spent way too much of her money on giant, super clean houses and maintaining a fleet of maids to sign things for her.
And also, there's the scene where she's like, you're going to have to get, like, a scholarship for your boarding school.
Yeah, that's when she's still in high school.
She's like, we're so poor now. And then you go upstairs and she is passed out drunk with, like, 10 or 20 new dresses that she just bought.
There was a fantastic shot in it's that restaurant scene when the daughters come home for the weekend and she's saying, "We had to let the maid go," and then she lifts like her cup up to her hand and just you see the diamond encrusted bracelet, huge ring on her hand while she's saying, "We don't have any money."
Yeah. We have to get to my favorite part of the Joan Crawford story, which is that late in life the daughter gets a job on a soap opera. Christina Crawford for real got a job on General Hospital or something in the early 70s. And when she suffered from an ovarian cyst and had to go to the hospital, Joan Crawford took over and played her. She didn't play her mom or anything on the show. She played Christina Crawford, who was 28 years old at the time.
Yeah.
In the soap opera for about 10 episodes.
Yep.
Which, that's one of those details that if you didn't know it was true, you'd be like, what the fuck?
Honestly, here's what this movie could have done to be an amazing movie. Shorten the scale to just that. Just the story of Joan Crawford playing Christina Crawford's character on Days of Our Lives or whatever the hell that was for 10 episodes. You could make it a little Wes Anderson-y movie or like a Richard Linklater or something. Just really zoom in on that one little bit of the biopic. And that would have been awesome.
Yeah, I'm seeing like Robert Altman directing this little...
Yeah,
okay, zombie on set movie.
Yeah, zombie Robert Altman.
Yes.
Fire bad, action.
Ensemble cast good.
Talk over each other. Silence bad, silence bad.
Yeah, so after that, we get the last scene with Joan alive. Is her daughter accepting an award for her.
We don't even know what the award is.
It's just, our organization wants to present Joan Crawford with an award. Just an award.
The good enoughy. Here it is.
You were famous. Here's the Grats on Being Famous Award.
It was televised, so it must have been at least like, I don't know, a SAG Award Lifetime Achievement or something.
Yeah, I think back then the Oscars were still short enough that you could probably show the technical awards and shit. So maybe it was that, or it probably wasn't. I wouldn't surprise me if she won a Lifetime Oscar. And it was presented by some random bearded guy.
Yes.
Yeah, me.
It was John. It was John. 1973, John shows up on scene, negative 8 years old.
Hey, man. They had a pizza they needed delivered, and I was going to be there in 30 minutes or less.
30 minutes or less. The hot new pizza licensed property. We're still not sure what we're doing with this.
The license is hot and ready for you in 30 minutes or less.
What are we doing with that? Is it a role-playing game? Is it a web series? What are we making here?
Oh, it's everything. I'm going cross-brand. We've got lunchboxes. We got cereals.
Flamethrowers.
So she accepts that, and Joan Crawford cries a single tear as her daughter...
Doesn't do a good enough job.
Manages to not tell an entire audience of people, oh, my mom's fucking
crazy.
I
was crossing my fingers so much for that breakdown, or she'd turn to the camera and go, and I just wanted to say, my mom is an insane bitch.
Yeah. But it's so weird that her accent throughout the movie, the daughter's accent, is this kind of, like, trying to hide a southern accent thing that she's doing, and there's no way. She grew up in Hollywood.
Right.
There's no way she has that accent. Her mom does the mid-Atlantic accent a little bit, and then also a lot of arch LA accent.
Mm-hmm.
Her daughter somehow picks up Southern, and it's just like, nope, that's just an actor. That's just, you can't, they told her not to be so Southern, and she couldn't.
Then we get the funeral.
Yeah, I wanted to mention one more thing about the accent. It's especially noticeable that she has this soft Southern accent, because the maid's name is Carol Ann.
Carol Ann!
Yeah, so there's a lot of shots of her running around in houses going, Carol Ann!
Walk into the light, Carol Ann!
Carol Ann, my mom is drunk, Carol Ann.
Watch out for that clown, Carol Ann!
You have to want to go into the light.
It was on an Indian burial ground! You just moved the gravestones!
So, Anyway, there's a whole Poltergeist theme that was really fun. As we watched through the movie, we're just like, yay, Poltergeist!
Yay, this is something that reminds me of a slightly better movie, but I don't like Poltergeist. Fuck you, fight me.
Oh.
Anyway, the movie ends and they shove the TV out of the hotel room and that's the end of it.
yeah, that's the last shot. Joan Crawford dies and then they push a TV out of a hotel room.
Just push her out of a hotel room dead. On a little cart. Meh.
And wheeled out.
Yeah. Anyway, she dies. And we get a shot of her daughter looking at her and going like, oh, mommy, you're dead. I'm sad. And again, I feel like this is strong coloring from the book being written where the daughter did not want to present what she actually did at her mom's funeral,
which is just fuck you.
No, I completely believe it. And this goes with my whole narcissistic personality disorder theory, that the whole idea is that the boundaries between mother and daughter were completely broken down. And
oh, yeah,
it was strange and painful. She probably was surprised that she was sad, because when she's away from her mother, she thinks about what a cunt her mother is.
Yeah.
But then when she's in the presence of her mother, suddenly she loves her again, or feels like they're the same person. And
yeah.
Well, you did have the maid shows up and is like, oh, your mother loved you so much. She's like, I really wish I could believe that.
Yeah.
Like, I need to believe that.
Well, exactly. She said, I need to believe that. Yeah. She didn't want to give up on the idea that her mother had still cared about her.
I wish she broke me the way she broke you.
Oh, God. The fact that the maid outlives that mother, I was like, oh, my God. How is that even possible?
Well, she's going to get buried alive with her. She's going to go down there and clean the grave.
If you, to this day, if you go to Joan Crawford's pyramid, where she is entombed, you will find the remains of Carol Ann.
Who never made it into the light, I guess. And then we get the hilarious scene, the very end, the coda of the film, which is a lawyer talking to Xander Berkeley, by the way, a 80s character actor icon and the second most famous person in this movie, who has one line as the adult Christopher. One line.
I think there were two.
Maybe two. So yeah. that gives this character, her brother, like a major character, one of three people who live in the house, three lines.
Yay.
Anyway, he's just like, yeah, mom's dead. Sure enough. Okay.
Well, that sucked.
Let's go sit in the lawyer's office. And then, sure enough, the last shot that Joan Crawford manages to take across her daughter's bow is to leave her nothing in the will. Which, I know that she's like, oh, well, it's mostly the thought that counts. Because she literally, the line in the will is like, I leave them no provisions, and I think they know why. Because
they have to be self-sufficient.
Yeah. But, you know, it's one last little shot at them that she has to take. Even though we know she dies poor, so what's she leaving them anyway?
Yeah.
She got them from beyond the grave!
Yeah. So it's not like she has a really good shot she can take. But then we get the brother.
Well, yeah, the brother's like, what? Oh, well, I guess that mom got the last word, as always. And then, oh my God, just the close, slow zoom in on Christina where it's like, oh, but did she?
No, you didn't wait long enough. It was like 15 seconds between the first did she and the second did she.
They do, Mr. Frodo. They do. Taters.
There is another Skag Walker City of Violence.
And yeah, that's our fade out. And then it doesn't freeze frame on her. She just holds that face as she stares at her brother, and then credits start to roll over her just staring at him.
Yes, it was hard to tell if it was in fact a freeze frame or if it was just her trying to sit very still.
She's real good at corpse acting if that's the case. They should
I want a reverse shot of the brother like, what the fuck?
He just gets up and wanders off. He's like, God damn it, you're as crazy as she was. I'm so glad I was strapped to a bed for my childhood. Goodbye. I'm going to go be in a bunch of 80s sex comedies. Not you, Diana Scarmid. You're going to disappear.
You, get out.
Yeah. All right, so, John.
There we go. That was the movie. Now, normally, we would rate the movie, just Jeff and I, on a 1 through 5, and that would give us our scale out of 10.
So are we doing on a scale of 1.1 to 3.3?
Yes, 1 to 3.3 repeating, of course.
Or just you and I do 1 to 5s, and her vote counts as a guest vote, as in not at all.
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
One of those. Oh, we're going to be very interested in your vote, however. Yeah.
Okay, we'll let you have your own vote. You get a 1 to 10, just you.
Oh my gosh, really?
It's all
like
for you, Damien.
I'd like to thank the Academy.
All right, so Jeff, let's get your score, Mommy Dearest, 1 to 5. What do you give it?
I'm going to give this one a 1.5. A little better than some of the other movies I've actively disliked, although this is a deeply boring film. So even if you're like, oh man, the themes of this thing are awesome, and there's like There's interesting play happening between the mother and the daughter. It's a wonderful portrait of insanity, but there's like 8 of these vignettes, and I only needed 1 to get the point across that she's crazy, because the next one's just the same vignette again. She just does something different. So I'm going to give it a 1.5 because I really like period dress, and there's a whole 0.5 bonus in there for Rad 50s lawyer guy at the beginning. Baby! Yeah. So there you go, a 1.5.
And her husband also called people Pally, which I appreciate.
Oh yeah, her Pepsi husband called people Pally.
Good choice.
Fourth
John.
Guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So for me, I'm going to give this a 0.5.
John was hurting during this movie.
Oh my God. I didn't have my cell phone out for the first half of this movie.
He really gave it the old college try.
I was trying so hard, but it's so bad. It's not just boring. It's offensively boring in the way that it's made.
It's not very well made. That's a big thing for this
movie.
That's
the problem. It made insanity and child abuse and Hollywood scandal into something that made me want to take a nap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck you, movie. I don't like you. You get 0.5 for Rad 50s, dude, and that's all you get.
Yeah, like I said, he's totally worth a bonus 0.5.
That is his bonus 0.5 on this movie. So we go to a 2 out of 10 for us. Now, special guest, Claire, your 1 to 10, what are you giving the movie?
This is so hard, because I agree with you that it's boring in that it's like the screenwriter didn't understand the concept of, like, rising action, because there is none. There's really no climax to the film. There's just no structure. It's just scenes in a row that just sort of lay there. And I'm sensitive to film structure, and so that upset me. But on the other hand, the individual scenes I occasionally found compelling. So I think I'm going to have to go with like a 4 out of 10.
Holy shit. Yep. Double our score.
Yep. Mm.
There you go.
Fair enough. I mean, also, I assume you're a sucker for the period clothing.
The period clothing was pretty great. You know, yeah. Faye Dunaway swanning around in, you know, long flowing purple gowns is going to get at least a point.
And you did have one coat in there that I think gave you a half gasm.
Oh, yeah. They go into the new New York apartment, she's straight up wearing a Cruella de Vil outfit.
It was so good. Yeah, that coat and that. I have a coat thing, apparently, because the coat that Robin Wright Penn wears in the last scene of season 2 of House of Cards. Google this shit. Great coat and very similar.
I don't even need to Google it. I agree. I love that scene. Okay, so
there you go.
Yeah.
The average then, I suppose, would be about a 3 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
If you're, sure, why not?
It's a 2 out of 10. Don't watch it.
Don't listen to Claire.
Run.
Call the police.
So there you go. That was Mommy Dearest. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to Claire for joining us. You have been on the show a couple times. If you want to check out more Claire and you haven't heard her before, she was on the episode for Maid, which...
Dear God, I still wake up screaming.
And then also, I believe, for Scion.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can go check those out for the System Mastery podcasts. And you can go ahead and let us know if you liked having another person on the show, because we probably won't, and it doesn't matter if you did.
No, I think we could get more guests. I mean, now that we both actually have, like, jobs, like, real jobs, and we can pay rent, maybe we'll finally use the Patreon money for what we're supposed to and get soundboards.
Which is hiring actors to pretend they like us.
Paying our friends to pretend they like us.
So, thank you so much. You can always find us on Twitter or Facebook or all of the social medias. We're System Mastery on everything. It's systemmastery@gmail.com. SystemMasteryPodcast.com if you want to leave any comments. Maybe you love this movie, you think we're idiots. Let us know. You're wrong, but let us know.
Also, drag queens, call us. We need to get a Kickstarter going for the musical.
Right, that's true. Please. Please, as many drag queens as possible, call me right away.
I need a gaggle of drag
but
queens.
But none of you say yes, queen. I really don't. For some reason, I don't like that phrase. I'm not sure why.
It's kind of racist. It's racial appropriation.
Okay, it's a little racist, and also I think it got appropriated by straight people immediately.
Oh, yeah, my 13-year-old sister.
Yeah, so I think it didn't last long enough in the gay community to become campy and fun. It was just immediately picked. It's like whenever you hear white people saying, like, black slang, you're like, why? Don't do that. You don't sound cool. That's what Yas Queen has turned into, like, immediately.
Double appropriated, yeah. Actually. I like that.
Yeah, it's been double appropriated. Now it's for sweatpants ice cream women. That's who's left who are allowed to say Yas Queen.
Yeah, there you go.
Like, I'm going to watch all of this season on Netflix. Yas Queen. That's my act of drag rebellion.
Oh. Take it back. Take it back.
Take it all back.
But not on the phone with me. Thank you.
All right. So thank you so much for joining us. If you want to give us a movie that you want us to watch, go ahead and let us know. Just send it to the Twitter or email. We'll put it on the list and we will randomly roll to see what we are watching next. So join us in 2 weeks when we will have some random movie that you want us to watch.
Because you hate them.
So much. I mean, at least this one was like a Hollywood film. There's stuff on that list that's like, you know, it's an instructional video I found in a Baskin-Robbins.
This is a,
watch this.
This is a video for a German instructions on how to lift boxes.
Has anyone put Birdemic on the list?
Yes, yeah, Birdemic, because, okay, is, Birdemic is on the list.
I'm gonna flip the die there, over next time to get to that one.
There's a few other things on the list that are famous, super bad, not even movies. Like, let's see, there's Birdemic, and then there's also A Talking Cat. Which
oh,
God. You remember when we watched, and you didn't get to watch it with us, but you were planning to, but you were going to watch with us 1313 Franken Queen.
Oh.
It is a movie that is not actually a movie, that's just people on stage.
Just the shirtless dudes walking around so you can look at them, and that's all the movie is. Well, this, A Talking Cat, has the same director.
Oh, dear.
And it's David DeCoteau, who apparently tried once to make a Hollywood movie, and he made A Talking Cat, and then he went back to making, like, 1313 UFO Invasion and shit. Yeah. He just makes... anyway, there you go. So there's a lot of horrible things on there, but it could get worse, so send them in.
Yeah, let us know what you want. It goes on the list, and we will see you in 2 weeks for another Movie Mastery.